Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Break on through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me as always is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, tonight is an after midnight show, which means while we do not allow for smut porn or overly graphic violence, we do allow for a bit more adult content and language. If you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have 1 to 2 shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everyone's taste. Also, when you get a chance, make sure to check out the poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. Now, for tonight's poetry, or for tonight's show, Rex and I ran a pre-writes contest asking for writes that fit into the theme of surrealism and Dadaism, which meant that either the rites themselves had to be surrealistic or Dada in nature, or they had to be inspired by artwork or a quote that related to that prompt. And because we ran a large contest of 35 rites, we will be doing this as a two-part show, tonight being the first part and the second part being on the 14th of January. And I am definitely looking forward to tonight's poetry. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
All righty. What's up?
Oh, not much. I tell you, you know what? I never get tired of that song. I pretty much never get tired of any song from The Doors. you know, that, I mean, there's so many just great songs that they have. And every time I listen to that one, I just, you know, start getting all bouncy. And I want to, like, do my air guitar. I totally want to just break out into my air guitar. And, you know, but let's see. Well, I say all in all, I'm doing pretty good, you know. I staying indoors a lot, although this winter hasn't been as cold as much. Still a wee bit chilly. So, you know, but you know, the thing is with tonight's poetry, like, you know, because as the quote says, and I forget who says the quote, it might be Tristan Zara, is Dadaism is everything and it is nothing. So, you know, and surrealism, because of its dreamlike quality, is so open to interpretation. I feel like by offering this kind of topic up to people, we allow for a real freedom of thought. What do you think, Rex?
Yeah, it's, well, it does walk into the realm of things that are unusual, fantastic, outside the norm, super realistic, so to speak.
Exactly. Exactly. Nope. So, there. Well, you know, Jeremy was on the line, and I was going to pick him up shortly, and then I went to look, and he disappeared. Like, what the heck? Huh.
Back to the hot tub time machine.
I know. What's up with that? He must have had something going on. Mrs. must have been yelling at him or something. Who knows? But hopefully he'll call back. That is quite odd. But, you know, like I said, maybe he'll call back. And if not, we'll just continue on. But, yeah, as you said, you know, it's out of the realm of the thought. It allows for thought that's, you know, out of the realm of the norm. So definitely going to be some fun stuff to dig into. And, all right. What do you say, Rex? What should we get this show started with?
We're going to do The Real Sleep by David Meyerhoff. The Real Sleep. Night of dreams, whisper of darkness, the rush of air through the cone of silence. Walls collapsing on the cavern of rest, ceiling rising higher into the balcony of sky. Music heard from all around, coming from nowhere and never leaving. The dancing of mice in the attic above, celebrating the bait that will catch them in a snare. Reality or fantasy, who can say? The blending of unlikely with impossible. Time to arise, but not just yet. Another few moments to pass into next year. And poem.
Great read, Rex. And what an excellent choice for a poem to start the show off with. Even the title fits in well with the topic of surrealism. Surreal sleep, night of dreams, whisper of darkness, the rush of air through the cone of silence. I like how this becomes about the dreams of not only the visual, but of the movement that doesn't make sense, the movement that takes on the surrealistic feel, like walls collapsing on the cavern of rest, music heard from all around. The dancing of mice in the attic above, celebrating the bait that will catch them in a snare. Now, the dancing of mice in the attic above, that stanza there, it's particularly, to me, a strong one in that it has, I think, the most metaphor within it. in the idea that oftentimes we celebrate that which ends up poisoning us and in the end. And I like that this is all about that dreams, those dreams of music and dance and movement. And then how he ends it, time to arrive, but not just yet, another few moments to pass into next year. It really gives thought to how bizarre the last couple of years have been, and to really how we try to escape times like this into a land of dreams. So really just a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done. And Rex, I look forward to hearing your thoughts.
Well, I hit the surreal angle with the through the cone of silence, because all I could think of right at that moment was Maxwell Smart, Secret Agent 86 of Control and their cone of silence that he always insisted on, and which was surreal in and of itself, because not only couldn't you hear anything, it echoed like hell. So nice touch with that one. Now the dancing mice in the attic above had me thinking of the rat race, the turning spinning wheel of the mind itself, and celebrating the bait that will catch him in the snare, kind of hoping that you can grab those or gravitate those thoughts to a singular point, the baited trap, so to speak, that point in your mind where you can just shuffle them off the planet in that moment. The reality of fantasy, the blending unlikely with impossible, it just hits on the notion of surrealism in and of itself. And the thought at the back end of this is, hey, kind of a rough night, so I could use a few more minutes of sleep. But the thought of passing into next year does hit on that note for looking forward to something that the new year might bring a little peace into.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I like those thoughts that you have. Really great observations. And I'd like to welcome Confess to the show. Welcome, Confess. Glad you could join us.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Confess.
And
how are you doing? Oh,
I'll
we got
right
another?
Now. Oh, yes. Yes, we do. And I'd like to welcome Jeremy to the show. Welcome, Jeremy. Glad you could join us.
Hey, guys. Happy to be here.
Hello, Jeremy. Jeremy.
And, long time no talk, Confess, huh? What has it been, like a whole, like, 35 minutes or something?
I just said I'll be late for my own funeral. I look at the time, I'm like, Jesus, it's already 11:40. I'm like, oh, God. I mean, so I just made like a reminder for myself on my phone now, because I'm like, I'm always late. So, all right. We're gonna get
I understand that. Well, it's good to have you both here. And just so you know, Rex, Confess does have a right on the board.
Okay, I'll go pick that one up next. I got one coming on the board now for you.
I do, but now I'm looking at what it's about, and I'm feeling like maybe it's a little too dark for this topic.
Oh, it's
after
midnight. It's okay.
Okay.
All right, so who is reading this next one here?
I guess I can do it. The Literary Society of Porcelain Pundits by Moshe 18. I will not write this poem or waste my slipping mind with a fine-toothed comb just to brutalize our time while crapping on this throne. The apple at your eye is a tumor. The people that you fly are rumored. I've swallowed up my poem and let it up my crimes with traps of broken bones and silly little rhymes still sitting on this throne. I should have warned you sooner. You've caught me in the humor and poem.
I did enjoy that one. It was great. Great read there, Rex. And just a reminder, though, make sure you have four or three other people here that you can let read poetry. Not that we don't all just adore your voice, but, you know. And let's start with your thoughts, Confess.
Okay. I like that we can talk about the historic meaning behind the surrealism in this way where they are trying to seem like they're trying to give kind of an ode to that time because they're talking about porcelain. And when I think of porcelain, I think of, you know, 1900s. I don't know why, but that's what I think of, porcelain dolls, you know, that old feel. And then I wanted to point out something in this first stanza. I think this is the fifth line. 1, 2, 3, 4, yeah. While crapping on his throne. I understand that this is supposed to be humor as well. And I like when people use humor, but it's kind of a dark humor. And I love dark comedy. I don't know why, I really do. I also try to incorporate it in my poem, but sometimes it just doesn't hit hard like this one does. You know, you see the humor, you can feel it as you read it, and I thought they did a wonderful job.
I like that. Great observations there. Thank you. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Yeah, I read it more as I appreciate what was just said, but I think it's more toilet humor. I think he's talking about the porcelain god and sitting on his throne and composing a poem while doing the deed on the potty. And that's kind of the dark side of what you just said. I agree with, but that's how I took all of this. And I think it's kind of tongue in cheek, obviously. And I think it's well pitched. And what I like the most about it is, "Or waste my slipping mind," in the second line, because it's kind of that Alice in Wonderland, Mad Hatter's party, but from a very different locale. So yeah, I think it was a funny poem. I think it was well pitched, and I think it was crazy enough to fly in a lot of ways.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. It does have that kind of within that one line, that Alice in Wonderland type craziness to it. So yeah, and some great humor. So great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, I got to start with that title, The Literary Society of Porcelain Pundits. There's the big joke right up front in your face, because from there on, you don't know where he's going to go, but it's kind of obvious. That thought with the opening, I will not write this poem or waste my slipping mind with a fine-tooth comb just to brutalize our time while crapping on this throne. A nice touch to waste my slipping mind. The apple at your eyes, a tumor. I think he's talking about that one-eyed sty just peeking into the bowl itself. And the thought with I've swallowed up my poem, a trapped little bone, still the rhyme sitting on the stone. I think he's talking about wiping his ass right there because the thought is he's making fun of those who think they're so literal and literary that they can actually write while taking a dump, as though you're supposed to be offering up clever words of wisdom while relieving yourself.
I like that, Rex. Well said,
yeah.
Dan. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's the thing is that some people really offer themselves up as being quite wise, but they're just full of crap. Yeah, I really did like those lines. The apple at your eyes, a tumor, the people that you fly are rumors. I should have warned you sooner. You've caught me in a humor. I like that whole idea, too. You know, you think I'm being philosophical here, but really I'm just having fun and being silly. So, you know, I just really thought this was a great write. Real great, nice tone of just that kind of out there wackiness that fits really well with the show, and very well done. All right. What do you got for us next, Rex?
Swinging Grace by Quintet.
Oh. Okay. Well. Okay. All right. I'll go ahead. Swinging Grace. A catacomb upheaved gracefully, hauntingly. They jeered and cast straight at them. Languishly, I pondered. Unflinchingly and bold, they displayed, unafraid, plucked like wildflowers, eradicated like spiders. These annihilated beings, unjust and seemingly unprincipled, extinguishing these black bodies like charcoal tar, slaying riches away for sport, slaying away, waving to others in the sky with them, silently, this historic nauseated aroma, swinging, a prayer from Mammy, a laughter from Karen, repulsive pointing, systematically those who reap a beneficial gain from those swinging graves should be ashamed, dissolving generations of lawyers, doctors, farmers, and my own great-grandfather's name, our own selves, black, white, any color should fight against wickedness, flight, lewd miseries we as colors may paint at night, slaughtered at dusk, found in the dawn, sheltered right in front of that early sun. Hatred graves no longer slaves, diabolically seized to exist until another stage, modern day, retreated in a hidden gem, hidden colors, hidden policies, conspicuous privilege, undeniably lives on and swinging right in front of us. End poem.
Wonderful read, Confess, and I have to say, bravo, that is just a hard-hitting write, and of course I'll be commenting further, but I want to hear from the guys first. So, Rex, I'd like to hear your thoughts first.
It's quite a perspective on that, which has graced many lands, this one too, over the centuries. There's a whole lot of truth and honesty in here, from the castrated to the plucked like wildflowers, annihilated, slaying riches away for sport. There was a time when quite the thought, having mandingos with the usual big guys they brought over for their sporting, their boxing matches, so to speak. And the sort of swinging graves, that does hit hard as far as the noose and the tree goes from many a day across the country. Well, it not only walks just in the sort of slavery, it hits on a sort of indigenous peoples, how they were ran out, how everybody who was treated as being savage because they didn't have the enlightened view of language, script, and other necessities, being living on the land itself, which is basically what all indigenous peoples are.
Absolutely. Really well said there, Rex. I like how you mentioned that this is the truth for so many areas throughout history. And while the poem does focus a lot on the unfortunate deaths and persecution of black folks throughout history, as you mentioned, persecution has come to many people, who didn't agree or see spirituality the same as the so-called enlightened. Such as the indigenous people. And I'm really glad you brought that up, Rex, because I think that's an important thought there. And I do also like how you mentioned the swinging graves, because that, with that phrase there, gives so much thought and imagery that hits you really hard to the idea of people who were persecuted and hung by lynch mobs, and it's so sad. But really great observations there, Rex. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, lynching that occurred in the past, and we see that as obviously it's murder. It's an ugly injustice in the country's past that was aimed and politically motivated, racially motivated. But I like how in the fifth, how that swinging and something that you think of the past being lynching, that was an egregious event. There's a prayer from Mammy, and then laughter from Karen, repulsively pointing. That's taking something that was egregiously done in the past and then bringing it to the present and then making something and carrying that feeling that although that lynching is still not occurring, there's still the persecution of minorities in the country. And I like that how that one little stanza kind of brought that same feeling of something that was awful to modern day. The other part that I really liked is the stanza that says, our own selves, black, white, any color should fight. Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's everyone's burden, no matter what race they belong to or identify as, need to come together. And that's the big problem. I think everyone needs to put aside all of this and work together to be equal. And I really appreciated that stanza as well.
Yeah, that
oh,
Karen
absolutely.
Thought was on.
Oh, go ahead, Rex.
No, that Karen thought was spot on. That brought it forward nicely.
It really did. It really did. Yeah, and I was glad that you brought that part up because, Jeremy, that it really does bring it from the past into the present with the idea that kind of persecution still exists. And I thought it was really clever in the way you used Mammy to represent the African-American woman of the past and Karen to represent a certain type of woman, you know, from the present. And I too really like where you said, our own lewd selves, black, white, any color should fight against wickedness, flight, lewd misery. You know, it is everybody's problem, everybody's concern. There's a wonderful write all the way through, really strong in its message. I really like unflinchingly and bold, they displayed unafraid, plucked like wildflowers, eradicated like spiders. That is heartfelt imagery in the idea that eradicated like spiders sees it as people being not treated like humans, but rather treated like a pest that needs to be gotten rid of. It makes me think a lot of the concentration camps during World War II and how, you know, people were killed just for not fitting into a standard that of what people thought humanity should be. I really like that you remind us that this is not just something that's in the past. It's something a concern, an issue that is current. So wonderful, right, concern and very well done. Or confess, I'm sorry. I was thinking of the word concern, obviously. And then...
It's okay. I thought everyone had great annotations, and you're absolutely spot on with those annotations and how I was trying to bring something from historical remnant back into the present time and how it's been hidden into different things. Now it's more of a classism issue than I would say racism, but you never know. It all gets sucked into the same, what Machi says, the same porcelain toilet. So that's what I would say. This poem was supposed to be representing, right? This poem was supposed to be representing from a concept we were writing about Billie Holiday's song, Strange Fruit. And from that song, this is where the poem kind of was inspired from. So it was written, the Strange Fruit was written in 1920s. And I chose this poem because of the surrealism was started in 1920s. So that's why I chose this one. And after I read some of the other ones that were submitted, I was like, ooh, I think it's a little too deep.
Well, you know, I'm glad you shared this poem with us tonight.
Well,
so,
yeah,
and thank
I appreciate
you.
That I do share it, because you guys have really great perspectives and just very, just appreciate the feedback, so thank you.
Oh, absolutely. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
How about Coordination by Kenny W. And Jeremy, your batter up. You got the hand eye for that?
Swing and a miss. Coordination by Kenny W. Please, can I have your concentration and give a representation, getting your interpretation or at least an estimation on how to get the best hand-eye coordination. Let me give you my explanation. It needs a separation, some stimulation, then a transplantation and an iris regeneration and palm reorientation. Voila, a new creation. It's a new sensation causing exclamations, not to mention a fascination throughout the baseballing nation. And what, may you ask, is its application? How about catcher for the Orioles? End poem.
Oh, this was great. You can tell he had fun with this, right? You know, and with so many shun-ending rhymes within, like, 99% of the poem, you know, you can't help but feel that he chose that to add that kind of layer of, I for lack of a better word, I'll just say corniness to it. I really liked this and found that it was quite fun, and you did a wonderful read of that, Jeremy. And confess, let's start with your thoughts.
Okay, so what I was thinking was I took creative writing in high school, and that's when I really found out I really love writing poetry. So I wrote poetry to the point where I got, like, a rhyme book just so I could, like, find good words to rhyme with anything. And I'm saying this to say my teacher at the time had me so scared of rhyming because one of his, like, annotations to one of my poems was too much rhyme, more imagery. And so I think from the age 17 till now, I'm not going to say my age because I'm going to age myself, even though I sound so young, is, you know, rhyming, it started to, like, ache my soul. But in this way that I'm reading it here, it's not, I know you say it's corny, but to me it's like, see, you can rhyme, and it can be a brilliant poem, and it doesn't have to be overwhelming to my words, or I guess how when you read, it's like, oh, God, is this the same word again and again? You know, I guess to the teacher. But to me, I feel like it's true mastery if you can have a rhyming poem and it's not like, oh, God, so cliche, or, oh, I knew this word was coming next. I didn't know what word he would use next, you know. You got concentration, representation, interpretation. It's like these big rhyming words that no one really tries to hit on, you know. No one really wants to rhyme. You always want to feel like an expert at writing, so you're like, okay, I'll try to stay away from rhyme. But in this way, it's like masterful. Because it's none of the words you would ever think to rhyme with, you know? So I thought it was perfect.
Oh, you know, and you're right. It is interesting how people see poetry in different ways. And I'm not, you know, to me, I didn't mean it as salt. It was part of the delight of the poem. But, you know, it's funny mm-hmm. because when I used to write poetry, like back when I was in high school, I wrote nothing but rhyming poetry. And nowadays I do write more free verse, but I only wrote rhyming poetry. And one day my sister looked at me directly in the eyes and she said, "You do know that there is poetry that doesn't rhyme, don't you?" And I went, I do now. But yeah, it's really neat to hear with the same poem how people have different thoughts and reactions. And you are right, he did use like some words here that you don't always see within a poem. So it is clever. And Rex, your thoughts?
All right. I know he saw that picture, so yeah, that's going to work. And the choosing coordination was perfect. And I think he started with the very last line as his thought. How about catch it for the Orioles? And then worked his way from there, because everything in this hits on that sort of hand-eye coordination and the fact that he's obviously an Orioles fan, and the catcher sucks, I'm getting a good estimation from, because he's hitting on interpretation, estimation, hand-eye coordination, and then he gives you, let me give you my explanation, and then the thought of offering up why this would work for a catcher for the Orioles. Why? Because he get a very better perspective on where the ball is coming, because he's probably missing a whole lot of them, or he's dropping a whole lot, or they're sailing past him. He's just not very good as a catcher. So this works great as a mono rhyme, because it is definitely walking on that realm of how managers and coaches look at their catchers and pitchers and make the adjustments needed in their either their throwing to the catcher or how the catcher is supposed to be interpreting each and every pitcher. Because if you've got a single catcher on your team, he's taking care of all your pitchers. So he's got to know all the pitchers and how they pitch, how they function. He's got to make the right calls for ball strikes up, down, in the middle of the plate, wherever. And obviously this guy does not do a good job. So I think he worked in the bottom with that thought with about the catcher. And everything else was designed around the way baseball works as a thought between pitcher and catcher.
Yes, yes, you're right. It does. And you know what? As you were commenting, Rex, you said, I think you started with that last line. I suddenly realized you can read this poem from top to bottom and bottom to top. And either way, it makes sense. I mean, you know, so really great observations there, Rex. And you're right. And I did like how he referenced the Orioles. He says in his AN, understand Orioles going through a rough patch. For UK readers, substitute, how about wicketkeeper for England cricket team? Kenny is from, I think, Great Britain. Yep, or somewhere in the United Kingdom. Not exactly sure, but I would assume maybe not England, but, you know, you never know. But, yeah, great observations there, Rex. And Jeremy, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, spot on, Rex. I think that's really cool about what you said. I didn't even pick up on it, on the catcher and the pitcher's relationship and the unique perspective that a catcher has on what's going on in the baseball game. So really cool comment there. Confess, I do want to talk to your high school teacher, because I don't think there's ever enough rhyming in poetry. I mean, if you look at the grades.
I stepped away from it for a while, and then some of my poems I'll include it, and then I'll run away and then come back and then run away. And it's like, if you ever look at my writing, you'll see, oh, well, maybe now it's starting, is the flow going? And then it'll go back to some kind of like scissor cutting type of flow. I do it on purpose, but I love lines. It's amazing.
And Pam even talked about it, too, about realizing in the early stages of writing about how poetry wasn't realized as a has to have. But, yeah, I mean, all the greats use rhyming. Look at any lyricist today or in the past. Look at Seuss. Look at Chell Silverstein and the kids' poets. Look at even Shakespeare himself. Everything rhymed. They even had iambic pentameter and a march to make that rhyme set up. So I think it's kind of like we were talking about the other night, guys. If you use a device and you use it well, it makes the poem all the better. And I think this device is overly emphasized, but it's done for comedic value, and I think it comes across. I think it comes across really successful because it's an enjoyable poem to read through. You can emphasize it however you want, and still get the same kind of fun feel. And I think it was Pam at the beginning of this said that you could really tell that Kenny really had a lot of fun writing his poem. And I think anytime that we share a poem and you can tell that the author enjoyed the craft and enjoyed the artwork that they created, it makes it all the more fun for all of us. So, yeah, I enjoyed this.
And I actually did try to read it backwards, and you can totally read it backwards, and it still makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah,
and great
so cool.
Comment there, Jeremy. Great comments, everybody, and an excellent poem by Kenny W. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
The Hand of Destiny by Colette, and you have a SoundCloud.
All right, let me mosey on over, and here we go.
The Hand of Destiny by Colette. You raise the summits of your five cardinal points. Vocation, vocation, they call you in every direction. Blows, blows down my neck, your Sahara breath, breathe the breath of death. Doom, doom, the milk you boil, bubbles, doubles, of toil and troubles. Peel, peel, eczema flakes, peel, falling off the hand that feeds you. Stare, stare at the eye of destiny, I see everything, but know nothing. But what I know, I cannot tell you, lest you steer away from what you're meant to follow from birth. Turn, turn, that wheel of reincarnation, can't skip your turn, just tread, tread until your time has come, and you're no longer dead. Raise, raise from the mounds of bones, draw blood from your stone. Here you are, worming out of the sand, Ecce Homo, you're my man. End of poem.
Great read and write, Colab. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you cannot call in to read your poem, then making a recording is the next best thing, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Jeremy, let's start with your thoughts.
I love this one. The reason I'm giggling is because I like that this one really went out on a limb for me, and it kind of has that all-seeing eye. It's almost like the palm reader's the palm reader's warning on the doom that's going to come as they're flipping cards and telling you what your destiny might be. So it's kind of a dark mm-hmm. side of the seeing eye and the hand, the palm reading, and all of that is what I got from all of it.
Yeah.
Specifically, what I really enjoyed on this one was the fifth, peel, peel, eczema flakes, peel, following the hand that feeds you. I like the double, almost triple entendre that happened in that quick little stanza. But yeah, I this one was a fun one for me, even though I think there's kind of a darker, foreboding, undercast tone to all of it. It still kind of has that lighthearted feel in the fact that it's more of mysticism, which I always kind of feel is false science in a way. But definitely enjoyable. Enjoyed the read. And I think the tone, the other part I want to bring up is the tone of the performance. I really enjoy when people do SoundClouds or when an author joins us on a read, because you get that tone of exactly what their intent was. And I think that that was truly the case in this one. I think Colette had kind of that mystic tone to her voice as she presented this poem to me. So I guess that's what kind of spawned my thoughts.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. This can have a mystic humor and also kind of a dark feel to it. And there is this, it does go out on a limb in a very creative way. So excellent observations there. And confess your thoughts.
I love the onomatopoeia, the personification I see. I do see that, we just said it. the fortune teller kind of vibe with the all-seeing eye, like we were stating before, see that. And the other thing I'm trying to really recognize is the end, where the last stanzas was kind of throwing me off, where it says, here you are, warming out of the sand, esse homo, you're my man. And it's like, oh, God, now I feel like I need to look up what esse homo is, because it just threw
me
off.
It's a painting of Christ. It's a painting of Christ wearing the crown of thorns.
Okay.
It means behold the man.
Behold the man. Okay, that's why it says
Pontius Pilate said about Christ.
Ah, now it all comes together. See? So I'm like, oh, my God, I have to annotate this a little longer than I thought. But, yes, okay, so now it makes even more sense of eye beholder. Okay. Okay, thank you guys for that. So, yes, I'm just imagining when someone's talking about destiny that something needs there's some either uncertainty or there's something that has finally happened that they've kind of came to, like, okay, this was my destiny, or something is happening in the midst of, and now they're trying to see if what their destiny may be. So sounds like someone's going through a journey here. I could be wrong.
I like that. I like that. Great observations there. Thank you. And Rex, your thoughts?
I'm going to go, all right, the five cardinal points. It's four, but I think the reference here is the fifth one being your destined cardinal point, that which you are meant and drawn to no matter what. And the fact that this walks down to Christ in the bottom as echo homo, you're my man, kind of hits on that note, because she also hits in a raise from mounds of bones, draw blood from the stone. Tread until your time has come and you're no longer dead. There's nice, cleverly inferred thoughts to Christ and his life. The Sahara breath being breathe the breath of death. The milk you boil bubbles, doubles toil and troubles. A nice bit of Shakespeare drawn there, but also the thought of what Christ did at the temple by upturning the money lender's tables. His toil was definitely doubled with trouble from that point on. And the peel, that kind of hits on the flesh being taken off with the cat of nine, flesh being drawn off his back. And then she hits on what I know I cannot tell you, lest you steer away from what you're meant to follow from birth. So again, that note to that being your fifth cardinal point, your destiny, that which you inevitably would always have been drawn to. And then she hits on that wheel of reincarnation, can't just skip your turn. Again, rebirth. She hits on it twice in there. So I go that way.
Great observations, Rex. I really like how you picked apart several of the stanzas. The summits of your five cardinal points is interesting, because I had to look up cardinal points, and people might have already known this, but I didn't. Yes, Smarty. Thank you. yes, you are right.
Shut her down,
you are
Rex.
Right,
shut
Rex.
Her down.
But the reason, you know, to me that's interesting is because obviously, you know, there's only four cardinal points, and adding on a fifth one, you know, gives thought to the idea of you know, finding a new direction, finding a new way that wasn't seen before. I really liked how she doubled up on most of the language at the beginning of the stanzas with vocation, vocation, blows, blows, doom, doom, peel, peel. I really feel like it adds to the visceral language, and especially with peel, peel, eczema flakes, peel, falling off the hand that feeds you. And I like how you mentioned, Rex, that made you think of the whole idea of the cat o' nine whip lashing the back and the skin peeling off. I felt like tread until your time has come and you're no longer dead. I feel like that those lines are particularly important in the idea that they touch upon enlightenment, of finding your personal enlightenment. So really just a strong write and very well done. And Rex, if you ever want to shut me down, you're going to have to try a little harder than that. You got that, Jeremy?
Well, I'm cutting off the hand that feeds you. The end of that stanza was the thought of you've just given up the one who actually gave you manna from heaven and gave you fish from the sea and didn't have to do a damn thing about it except wave his hand, and it was there, kind of biting off the hand that feeds you. You gave up something very dear in that moment.
I like that thought. I like that. Absolutely. Well said there, Rex. All right. What do you got for us next?
Voice and Moon Jelly. It's your turn.
All right. Voice and Moon Jelly by Deb335. And it goes like this. It swam unfelt, unseen, unknown, from thoughtless trickles to creek, stream and river until ocean met through the open mouth of God. One microscopic razor-clawed mole sharpened itself on terracotta walls as it marched in the dry valley. Without harmony, bolt, or little boots, tiny feet grew spiked claws, talons, which dug, burrowed, into the backwaters of her. Without pre-knowledge, permission, she was transmutated into test tube milk donor, incubator of disposable, Madonna, horse, bull, rolled sheepskin white, coated worms, flush it, you filthy girl, it's retribution, plague, scourge, illness of consumption, defective mole embodiment of evil. You will be crowned as moon jelly, or Aurelia, chrysalis of consummation. Scrub and flush, filthy girl, dirty woman, said little girl, now what is that word? Chrysalis woman. Will not the body of my blood be the blood of its body? Could I become evil and evil come through me? Do you mole exist in a hedonistic slit where you spat from God? Will legacy pass with constriction, constraint without consent? Could I keep you a molten fish, slippery to hold, grow you wild, an absolution of antiquated sin? I must. The secret remove, wrap you in cloth, not a biblical weave, but taut armor, perfect, that you never know a birthright of scars. My curves swell, my innocent. I bear you the legacy and poem. All right, well, that was definitely a hard-hitting right there. And Rex, let's start with your thoughts.
Let's go. Let's see. I like the opening stanza. It walks a different tone before she gets into the second, which gets a little heavier. It swam unfelt, unseen, unknown, from thoughtless trickle to creek, stream, and river, until ocean met through the open mouth of God. And that kind of hits on the notion of birth right there. And it does get a well, not birth itself, but the thought of what will be going towards birth. Then she gets into it, transmutated in test tube, milk donor, incubator, disposables. It's kind of a notion of the thought of the ease of just going and having it rid, as this woman is telling her to be rid, scrub and flush, filthy girl, dirty woman. And the girl now, chrysalis woman. So kind of hits on that notion of somebody maybe a little useful and experienced, but now is pouring forth in a way that is she is growing. She's being molded into the woman who now will give birth. And there's that thought in the back end of this wrapping, not in cloth of biblical weave, but thought armor, perfect. So there's a notion of being heavily put down to the point that she doesn't want the baby to feel that kind of pain, to remove it. Kind of hits on that notion of the armor of God in that moment, putting on the armor of God to protect the innocent. But then again, you hit on the bottom end of this, my curse fell, my innocent, I bury the legacy. Kind of, did she actually go through with what her mother or aunt or whoever is telling her to be rid of this? So it's kind of open.
It is kind of open, and it is one of those rites that, you know, as you said, it's a difficult subject. I do want to mention, and then though I know this poem can be interpreted in other many ways, I feel like Rex really touched on the main idea, but it's just very important to be sensitive to people when it comes to difficult subjects like pregnancy and abortion. So, you know, but
I wasn't quite sure what the ending was on abortion, literally, or it was just the fact that put on that armor of God to say, no, I will not go that route.
Right. No, I totally get what you're saying, Rex. I'm just saying that as we discuss poetry like this, we have to, you know, be sensitive. And I think you've done, you know, a wonderful job. I just, you know me, it's part of my job to make sure the rules are followed or whatever, or, you know, I don't know. Not that there's any rules, but you know what I mean. But no, I like how you mentioned that end stanza there. And I really like how you mentioned the, the secret move, wrap you in cloth, not a biblical weave. You know, I like that you that brought on the idea of protecting a child with the armor of protecting the innocent with the armor of God. I think you made a really good point there. I also see this as, you know, maybe getting away from, you know, the idea of necessarily a how do I put this? Getting away from the laws of you know what people say, you know, your spirituality should or should not be, or how you should or should not raise a child, you know, because too often times views are sometimes warped, not all the time, you know, but sometimes, and there's this idea of, you know, perhaps protecting the child from warped views. You're right about that beginning stanza too, Rex. It was a really strong one with some great imagery in it. It just had a really wonderful spiritual feel to it. And, you know, it's difficult to be put in some of what this speaks of is the idea that too oftentimes in some situations the finger is pointed at the woman who is labeled as both the Madonna and the whore. And the humanity of a child, of an unborn child, because they're not shaped exactly like how we think humans should be, especially in the first trimester, I think oftentimes, and this is just my, is that the humanity of the child lost. And also the humanity of the woman who chose, you know, to have sex, who chose to express her sexual self, is lost to too many people. I think this is a strong and thought-provoking write and very well done. It's an emotional intensity and use of language and imagery. And so very cool. And great comment too, Rex. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Right on with your comments, Pam. I mean, right on. From the beginning on how Rex started to dissect this, the first two stanzas, I thought this was more of a creationist poem, talking about the orientation of life, the evolution, rather, and it even had some nuances of religion in there mixed in. And then in the third, yeah, it really takes that turn, and it becomes more of an individual attack on trying to follow the rules. It becomes more of an individual attack on the whole concept of abortion or any of the anything that goes along with that. And it really becomes kind of a touchy subject. And what really hit home for me is the fact that when it does take that turn, it takes a stance that is very antiquated, because I feel in the past, if a woman was promiscuous or got pregnant out of wedlock, it was this kind of voice and this kind of attitude was much more prevalent and much more heard in terms of the accusation of it being the woman's fault. And it's something that is not voiced as much anymore. And what you do with that information and how that's presented and how you digest that kind of perspective is something, being that you don't see it that much, I am not offended. I gotta be careful. I'm not offended with how this voice comes across, because I feel it comes across as a way of not cheering it along, but almost analyzing it. Guys, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's like it's not being a cheerleader for something that's a lesser or an unpopular viewpoint these days. It's more bringing it to light in my eyes. So that's why I don't look at it through such a microscope of criticism in that viewpoint. Wow. I'm going to stop before I go any further.
I enjoyed the poem. I'm dancing a lot.
No, that works. Because there were two kind of voices in it. So you heard the harsh voice, and then the sweeter voice, which I kind of latched on to from the top and the bottom end of it.
Yeah, and it's a scary – the line scares the shit out of you when you go through it, right? When you read any kind of viewpoint that is not in the popular modern-day dialect of what goes on, or the modern-day consciousness of how everyone looks at things, and you see something that's a little bit different, it's hard to comment on it and appreciate it, even if you don't necessarily agree with it. I think it's important to kind of bring it to light, and I think this is done in a tasteful manner is what I'm trying to say. I don't think that it's done it's not a damning voice. It's kind of it's identifying the voice of something that was in the past, as I viewed it.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Well said there, Jeremy. And confess your thoughts.
Yeah. I think my thoughts comes into the summary of a lot of everyone's annotation or perception. The only difference of my review is that I've been trying to figure out what certain words are and what they mean for just in their self. And we see that now I can't pronounce this damn word. Hold on. Chrysalis? Hold on. I have my dictionary out.
Chrysalis.
Okay, chrysalis.
So yeah, that was the word I stumbled over.
So chrysalis is supposed to be something of a transitional state or a hard outer case, enclosement. And I had to come to agreement with my fellow brother over here who, you know, we now know that, yes, this is definitely has to be about pregnancy, change. I don't know so much of abortion. I think what we keep going into that, I guess, stage is because the word bury is there, and my curve swell, my innocence, bury the legacy. Maybe the legacy was the innocence. Maybe it was we stay celibate or don't have sex until you get married kind of thing. And now she's changed that type of, like, tradition or something. And, you know, she goes to say without pre-knowledge permission, meaning, like, you know, this is that, like, I think it was Rex who said it. I could be wrong. It's like, you know, you're doing things out of wedlock. And, you know, those, it could all match up, you know. It could be something different. We don't know. But it is a very deep and thought-provoking poem, and I was very blown away from what I read.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Comments. Big comment there. Big comments, everybody. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Out on the Limb of Sleep by Ted Markstein. And Jeremy, you're up.
Out on the Limb of Sleep by Ted Markstein. Out on the limb of sleep, beyond the edge of reason, the order is chaos. Baker's trays of scrambled artifacts, passing no muster, packed tight, all manner of lions, all kinds of lambs. The chaos is order. Ring the bells in vibrant colors, endless walls climbing hills of rooms with no ceilings. Revisit and revisit and revisit. Can't find the door. The cards tumble, fall and fade. Gone back to black. And boom.
Great read there, Jeremy. And confess, let's go ahead and start with your thoughts.
Sounds like how I feel almost every night. I have insomnia sometimes where, like you guys see yesterday, I don't go to sleep until like 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning, knowing I have to be at work at 8. So this is just how exactly how I feel. It feels like someone is attacking me, and, you know, it could be chaotic where when you finally do go to sleep, now you're dreaming all of this craziness. And you're trying to figure out why. And it may have that noise of bells ringing or, you know, feelings being endless, or you ever have that dream where it seems like you're falling, or I even have, like, dreams where I'm fighting, yet I can't hit the person, or, like, it's like gravity just stopping my arms from reaching them. I'm like, I don't know. But it happens, you know, when you're dreaming. So I definitely saw where this poem was going. I love it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, great comment there. No, it's totally, you're right, there's a kind of relatability to this poem and how oftentimes dreams get just really crazy. And you try to understand them and interpret them. So, great comment there. And Rex, your thoughts.
First two stanzas, the end lines. The order is chaos. The chaos is order. The order is chaos on that first one is because you're on the out on the limb of sleep, and you try and ponder through it, but your mind at that point is chaos. Now, everything that second stanza, I like the metaphors. Baker's tray of scrambled artifacts, packed tight. All manners of lions, all kinds of lambs. There's that inference, counting sheep. And then the thought of chaos is order. And that's true because everything is jumbled in the moment and it rolls through your mind in the circular fashion. It's on the note of climbing hills, endless walls, of rooms, no ceilings, revisit, revisit, and revisit. There's that notion of keeping hitting on the same fallback solution. And you keep going back to it and back to it and back to it. There's something in the dream there that you're supposed to remember. Then and that thought of can't find the door, looking for a way out, and everything gone back to black. So all of a sudden, everything just flatlines in the moment. And you see.
I like that. Great observations. Yeah, I like that you brought up that line that repeats in the first two stanzas at the end, the order is chaos. And then the I shouldn't say repeats, but, you know, the order is chaos, and then the chaos is order. It's that whole, like you said, that whole idea of things, of thoughts being jumbled up. So really great comment there. And Jeremy, your thoughts.
Yeah, I really liked I liked the earlier comments. Absolutely confess, we can all agree that we've struggled with the ability of insomnia, or the inability to go to sleep and dealing with insomnia. And for this one, you're strapping on your spikes, you're climbing up that big tall pine, you're finding a sturdy branch, and you're going out to the end, and you're just reaching. You're on the edge of the limb, and you're reaching, hoping to fall asleep. And it's that angst. And you feel that all through the first three. And then what Rex pointed out in the final is that you finally achieve it. What I read in the final is that, yeah, you finally are able to fall. You're able to go back to black. You're finally able to be out on that limb and then let go, which is the ultimate release of everything that's built up in the first three. I think it's done in really succinct style. I also appreciate what Rex pointed out in the order is chaos and the chaos is order, in the yin and the yang of the first two stanzas. I think there's a lot in this, and I think it's, again, to what Confess said, I think it's something that we all can, it's an experience that we can all relate to, and I think that makes this a much more palatable poem on a lot of levels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there, Jeremy. I had a dream last night that I went to a Tom Petty concert, which is, of course, right away bizarre because Tom Petty's dead, with my son. And it was like one of those personal concerts, though, where it was only like about 15 of us and upstage. And we, as Tom Petty was singing and playing his guitar and his harmonica, we were all tossing a Bowie knife, like, back and forth. It was
Mumbly Peg.
Very bizarre. But I really liked this. I like what you all had to say. A line that particularly, the second stanza particularly stood out to me, especially all manner of lions, all kinds of lambs. And I like ring the bells in vibrant colors. I like the idea of ringing the bells. It's that whole idea that where you people hear sounds and then see colors. I really thought it got into the whole idea of how surrealistic oftentimes our dreams can be. And then, like Rex said about the ending line, gone back to black, it's that whole idea of it all just fading away. Really an excellent brevity here by Ted Markstein, and very well done. All right. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Deep-seed algae of tormented wild forested green by Richard Weissman, and you have a sound cloud.
All right. Here we go.
Deep-seed algae of tormented wild forested green by Richard Weissman. Beneath deep-seed algae of tormented wild forested green, rods, yellow rays lost under obscured mists, a sunless dark depth echoes through silenced versions of corpus, to darker now. The coldest sea line of oceanic flowers, lava vomits north. Question bleed revined in Atlantis, now throughout widest saline of red tide algae bloom, sweeps weeded answers and ancestrous sea depth visions. Paint Neptune's forest trees neath voidic seas, sweeps illusion, prays mantis eels, electric light. obscuring sun visors, mid-temporal night, dance a bird prey neath oceans to light, salt fortress of time-crept prisoners rise, obscure these visions in camera lens eye, wild, rewired throughout sea-clipped motion into phrasings unformulated, questionings which eternity's dusk cloaks. Sweepers from dark set hands of time's clock, as her cell-rayed mantis glides mid sun-stroked blind visuals throughout eternity's aqua dance. Now vines creep darker to shoreless depths, to paint Earth's seasons a quest, neath floods of sweat, turn whirl through funnel to wide ocean floor. In schools rise fish-headed vineyards, a deep, some ways silenced, somehow revived through darkened forests, unseen, humanic bred through these, as eeled birds sweep hollows, revined. End of poem.
Great reading right there, Richard. Thank you for the recording. It's very much appreciated. And Jeremy, let's start with your thoughts.
I'm going to steal your thunder, Pam, because the mythological feel on this one is deep, and I love how you always point that out. A lot of times I miss it, and this one I didn't miss. I got to start with the title on this one, because the title just gave me a huge smile, because I knew it was going to be a wild ride just from that, the first line, the title, and all of that. I think it was – it put me in that spot of it's going to go deep and it's going to be something that's much more imaginative and where and the roots of all of it. And it never – it didn't disappoint throughout. I like how it kept punching the whole way through. I like that the religious aspect was much more antiquated in its mythology. And I don't have a lot to comment other than I was just sitting back and enjoying the tone and the read and the feel of this entire poem. So I was taken away, and I think it was a wonderful submission for the topic tonight.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I was really glad that Richard put something in for this contest and show. And you're right, there is some poetry where, you know, you just sit back and enjoy the language, enjoy the feel of it. And as you said, as you so cruelly stole my thunder, you know, just enjoy delving into the mythology of it. You know, and then that's one of the great things about doing a show, about doing a contest for surrealism and Dadaism rights or abstract rights, is they're not only open to interpretation, but they're open to not interpreting. You can just say, you know what, I'm not going to interpret this. I'm just going to sit back, have a nice cold beer, and enjoy it. So, I mean, or not have a nice cold beer, you know, it's up to you. But great comment there, Jeremy. And Rex, let's hear your thoughts.
Nice. Right. There's, it walks on a couple levels. It hits on thoughts of disappearance of Atlantis. It does walk on that which we've been experiencing forever, the red tide algae blooms there. They choke out the oxygen, kill off everything in the arena that they're working in. It's on lava vomits north. Also another touch to the earth itself. So there's both that which the earth does naturally as well as that which comes from interference. You hit on the thought where there's a Ra's yellow rays lost under obscured mists, a sunless dark depth echoes through silenced versions of corpus. corpus being the body itself. And since the earth is a living, breathing entity, it's walking along those lines of not only what it does naturally, but what man has done to it as well. Salt washes time for prisoners rise. It's a thought to new creatures, that which wasn't supposed to be but now is. But I forgot the... Somehow, some way silence, somehow revived through darkened forest unseen. Humanic bred through bees as yield birth, sweet hollows, revived. Revived is kind of that, maybe the thought to being revisioned, because he does hit on a notion of, where was that one bit? Obscure these visions in camera lens eye. The eye means being a eye as a person, but also through the camera lens eye itself. So it's a double sort, leaving the wildness to what it's supposed to be, let it evolve as it should.
I like those thoughts, Rex. Great observations there. I like how you notice that throughout this, there's a lot of references to the earth, you know, to the, what the things that the earth does naturally and things that happen because of choices that mankind makes or ways that they treat the earth. And when you mentioned how, you know, there things exist that shouldn't have existed, it really gave food for thought and made me think about how oftentimes we try to play God. So just an excellent right. Well, it is an excellent right, but an excellent comment that you made. And confess your thoughts.
I think I'm more so the person that, in this situation, I want to let it be in its own self and then try to annotate it too much. As far as the medieval, or I think you said mythology, I didn't see that until someone stated that, so that's interesting. But yeah, other than that, and then Ra's yellow rays, I did definitely see mythology in that, you know, mentioned there in that third stanza, or third line in the beginning of the poem. So yes, that's kind of it for me. I didn't want to annotate too much. I just kind of wanted to enjoy that because I thought he read it so greatly.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Richard does have a wonderful reading voice. And, yeah, there's really strong imagery and metaphors throughout this, a nice layered feel to it. I really like Ra's yellow rays, Lothar's obscured mists, and sea depth vision, paint Neptune's forest trees, meet voidic seas, sweeps illusion, praise mantis, eels, electric light. There's really, to me, this idea of how the electric lights of the cities oftentimes hide the natural world, and there's this kind of interference that happens between humanity and nature. So really a thought-provoking light and very well done. And all right, what do you got for us next, Rex?
A Fruitless Dance Macabre with Salvador Dali by Myriad Dark. Yes, I got this one. The breast of the basilisk is reeking of irony as marble lovers embrace sprigs of spring feather in their felicitated icy flows. Meanwhile, I've taken to walking my feet surreptitiously through his cordwood brain, marveling at the views of children chasing butterflies with nets and killing jars, who in turn carefully watch for signs and see him there with paintbrush poised and a vision flowing from his dulled head. They are afraid and without hesitation drop their paraphernalia, disappearing like smoke through the looking glass. galleons appear on gilded mirrors, sails billowing, St. Francis towing the lines. The echoes of children from the shadows of ancient catacombs rebound like scintillating shards of mirror glass. As the cockatrice teems the melting hours and the children call, abandon are we of the salt pillar and cross, set our Madonna dreams down in the book of stars. A litany of penance flutter in a forest of binoculars, though dawn, wreaths, and haze. Hourglass men watch helplessly as their grainy insides slip away and the forest burns in the petals of swirling flames. Heraldic devices furiously debate their existence in elliptical orbits, bursting forth like 10 billion butterflies blinking, and a black Madonna exposes her sacred heart, a queen of hearts playing cards. A gilded mirror reflects my name instead of my image, and the children fade like smoky lullabies and prayers, their laughter floating down like tongues of fire. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven and on.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I have to say, I think there's something about the tone of your voice that really fits well oftentimes with Mary Dark's writing. So well done there. And confess your thoughts on this poem.
I feel like this poem had a lot of I felt like this poem had a lot of it's I see the humor. I see the happy, more light. It seems like it wanted to be light and hopeful and endearing, but also give you kind of a dark side as well, where, and also the children from the shadows of ancient catacombs, I see and hear death. I see and feel memories of something that they're trying to paint as a picture of this time. So yes, that's what I've seen right now. I will have to reread this again, but it was a very good poem.
Oh, absolutely. And it is one of those worth rereading. But yeah, I like how your observation about how there's things in here that are both light and dark. So it's kind of like the idea of an interweaving of both. And it is one of those rites that definitely it is a good one to read 2, 3, 4 times, you know. So excellent comment there. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
I'm going to take the easy parts of this. Yeah, I agree, Pam. I think this is a wonderful read by Rex. I enjoyed it, and I think it's a wonderful pairing between the content and the way that he was able to perform this poem. The language in it alone is enough to trip me up personally, and I think that it was very well conveyed to the rest of us. The beginning of it, I like the perspective of watching the kids. I still view myself, in fact, as that kid that's catching the butterflies in the jars and not realizing that I'm killing them until it's too late. And it's that innocence, that wanting to capture something beautiful and then realizing the horror of what has happened and then running away. I mean, that whole first stanza really, it's a metaphor on the fact of all of that being said, but also on the literal sense of actually doing what is being described in this comes from a perspective that you don't really normally see. You don't, as an adult, you don't sit there and watch that happen very often. So I thought it was a really cool way to convey that. I don't know. And I liked how, and then juxtapose that to the end, in which the narrative voice wants to be that child, wants to have that, and there's almost that nursery rhyme, that chant at the end of kids going to heaven. And you feel this kind of transformation of innocence in that the narrative voice wants to go back and be part of it. So you're witnessing something that's innocent and awful, and then you're still wanting to go back and be part of it. That's how I interpreted this poem.
I like that, the how you brought up the line about children chasing butterflies with nets and killing jars, and how there's that you made that observation of something that is both horrible and innocent, but you know, wanting to go back. Now, my guess is that those end lines, given that the way Rex changed his voice in reading, that those might actually come from an actual prayer or nursery rhyme. But I could be wrong. Rex could just be that quick. But Rex, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Well, the last two lines are, it is from, I don't remember what it's from, but I do remember it was included in a Beatles song. All good children go to heaven. I'll have to look that back up. I don't know which song it was. But overall, The Fruitless Dance Macabre of Salvador Dali is a nice touch at the title, as well as what he dealt into, because you got the basilisk in the first line, and then the second line, the second stanza, you've got down the cockatrice, which is a rooster, which lays an egg, which is then hatched by a snake. So it walks in that line of thought with a bit of spirituality, which Dali had in his painting, but he's referring to in here because he bites on it, St. Francis towing the line. It's called the Temptation of St. Francis of Assisi. And it's got huge elephants on long, spindly legs with the huge caravan tops with people in them. There's galleons on the sea. There's all manner of a vision in that picture itself. Now, there's melting hours in here. There's the sort of mirror glass. There's some other touches that kind of hit me up with the sort of, abandon our wheel of assault go across, because there's a picture of, in the left-hand corner, I think it is, St. Francis kind of prostrate on the ground with a large cross in his hands tilted at an angle. So there's the temptation in that, and the Madonna of Dreams down in the Book of Stars kind of alludes to that realm as well. And what else we got here? I feel that he hit on a couple of other touches from maybe one or two other pictures, as far as like melting imagery. I got that in there. And the mirror glass, the scintillating shards, there's kind of the sort of that which is broken and that which needs to get back to. Hourglass men watch helplessly as their grainy insights slip away. Kind of that notion of losing oneself. Forest burn, whirling flame. He dug deep into the painting and maybe one or two others as well. And if I can find it. Did you was that picture in the contest? Was that picture in the contest?
No. I didn't have any Salvador Dali artwork. But you are right. There is like the bursting forth like 10 billion butterflies blinking. I know there was a Salvador Dali painting where the ship's sails were made completely out of like a whole lot of butterflies.
Yeah, butterflies, yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. Great observation there, Rex, because there is a lot of quite a few references here to Salvador Dali's artwork, which oftentimes took on a religious feel. Like I think one of them was the Temptation of Saint Francis, he put this in a few other contests too. So it could have been one of the other contests, because ours was a pre-write. So it may have been that it was, one of the other contests featured Salvador Dali artwork. And when you're talking about surrealism art, Salvador Dali is definitely one of the first people, first artists that people think of. So great observations there. And Yeah, and I thought this had a strong imagery throughout. It was a wonderful write on this surrealism artwork that, you know, draws us in and really makes us think. So excellent write and very well done. All right. What do we got next?
No, I didn't do that. Okay. Got Of Purple Trees and Orange Skies by Daniel Descino. And since what's left is all male, you're going to have to use some female voices for the rest of what we got, as well as us.
Works for me.
Well, then you're getting the next one.
And by next one, you mean the one after this, right?
No, this one right here. This is the next one.
Okay. All right. Of Purple Trees and Orange Skies by Daniel Descino. And it goes like this. Reality is a rooftop sniper in the battle of every day. I am shot through the heart when I realize love is chemical. Shot to the head when I realize what a human is. And the worst part, I heal just to be target practice for tomorrow. But up ahead there is a bridge, a connection between insanities, and I have been insane in this world long enough. I need not run but think to cross it, a bridge of laughing stone and wobbly steel, wooden planks that still crawl as trees, suspended with ropes like dancing snakes, that extended skyward beyond vision across a river of perception to the escape, to where there is no anything except the everything that anything can be. I see with my hands and touch with my eyes, and colors dominate beyond the righteous rainbow limits, the true blue-green that yellow hides. Is more heard than seen. My watch bends around my wrist, with hands pointing beyond numbers, as persistence of memories floats in the air. And on the streets of today, I see the me of yesterday stand next to the me of tomorrow, who stands in turn in the picture of yesterday with the me of today. Time is a still life portrait that moves without motion, a businessman, the son of a businessman, with an apple of Eden's smile, just a raindrop of a man, hoping for an ocean of Golgotha, blinded through the pipe smoke I breathe to the pure treachery of image that I create. And that sniper who I did underestimate holds the vision of a prophetic hawk, soaring above both worlds I have bridged. He finds me wherever I hide, and I am pierced, surrealistic murder from the claws of reality that flies above. But the persistence of memory, like a vinyl time warp, unaffected by herd immunity, will stay alive on the backdrop of reality's canvas. I only need look. Test the obvious oblivion I call normal to imagine once more. End poem. And I am resisting the urge to sing Bon Jovi's Shot Through the Heart. So, just so y'all know.
Do it.
No. You have to pay to hear me sing. That's the deal. You don't get to hear me sing till you pay. So,
check is in the damn mail.
And speaking of which, Jeremy, your thoughts on this poem?
Yeah, it starts off really morbid, and it starts off really plain talking. And I was even formulating my response from the first couple stanzas thinking, yeah, it's kind of nice to see that Daniel is approaching this from a very everyday feel and a very everyday language.
And then he quickly, as this progressed, he quickly deviated from that. And it's kind of like this inner struggle. I read this or listened to this as an inner struggle of someone that's going through a crisis. They're thinking about doing something that's a very dark act, being a sniper and committing murder, doing something horrific in that regard. And it's the voice of a madman. The one particular stanza that just had me grinning because of its trippiness was, oh, where is it? I wanted to earmark it too. And on the streets of today, I see the me of yesterday stand next to the me of tomorrow, who stands in turn to the picture of yesterday with the me of today. I mean, it was just kind of this wrestling of who am I, what is real, what is not real. And I loved how Daniel just kind of let it go in those moments of this poem. I think there's a couple other instances too where he really just kind of let the psychedelic feel, the Dadaism, the surrealism of all of it kind of flow through his pen. And again, I can't emphasize enough, the fact that all of this kind of weirdness or surrealness or trippiness is going through a darker lens or a darker act makes it all the more sinister. And even though it has that evil feel, I'm still smiling in the craziness of all that's being presented. So I can appreciate and enjoy it, is all I'm trying to say.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think trippy is a great word to describe this, and especially that stanza that you pointed out where that it's kind of like that going back and forth of, like you said, who am I, you know? So excellent comment there. And Rex, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
I'm going to bend you on the evil. I'm going to go a different way. Reality is a rooftop sniper. The rooftop sniper, the mind. I am shot through the heart when I realize love is chemical. Shot to the head when I realize what a human is. And the worst part, I heal just to be target practice for tomorrow. So there's a reality in that it goes for that sort of I think, therefore I am. So the understanding is noting despite the brain, the heart has impact along with the brain, and you can't fight the two themselves. You have to include them because he hits on that with the shot to the head. He understands in that moment what it is to be human. That means you get the good with the bad, the ugly with the pretty. You get the heartache with the happiness. And then everything else from this went on down is that transition of, as you put it, the surreal walk through life. But I get the impression that this is Daniel's thoughts to who and what Dali was in and of himself. Looking into Dali's mind and then trying to explain the man and who he is and what he was. And this is how he came out with it. The escape to where anything, where there is no anything except the everything that anything can be. There's that thought of what he puts down on canvas. See with my hands, touch with my eyes. Again, the physicality of putting that which you can see in your mind through the canvas itself. The thought, my watch bends around my wrist. Again, it hits on that notion of the melting watches, the melting clocks, melting women. Persistence of memory is one of his most famous works, and he used it twice. Persistence of memory floats in the air. What else we got here? Golconda is, I think, a region in India that was pretty heavy in diamond production at one point in time, say like 600-700 years ago. Blinded through the pipe I smoke, a pipe smoke I breathe, the pure treachery of images that I create. And there's kind of a notion of he is who he is because he walked through the LSD of notions in surrealism. And what else? Surrealistic murder from the claws of reality that flies above. It gives you a little touch of that sweet bird which has massive claws on the as part of its body instead of the normal talons it might usually have. I call normal to imagine once more. That was definitely Dali.
Oh, absolutely. Really great observations there, Rex. Now, Golconda was also a painting done by René Magritte, who was another, obviously, most surrealism painter. And I think, and I like that you brought up how it delves into the mind of Salvador Dali. I think it, and when you said that, I started thinking that, you know, that it really delves really well into the mind of anyone who chooses to do artwork or art beyond the realm of the so-called normal. So really great observations there, Rex. And confess, I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I don't know why COVID came to my brain. Like, I don't know, maybe because I heard herd immunity, I instantly thought, well, maybe they're saying that what we're going through right now is surreal as far as dealing with COVID. And when they start talking about, you know, time is still a life portrait that moves without motion, then going to talking about the business, a businessman, son of a businessman. And when I hear things like that, and this, I could totally be way off, but I don't know why I instantly went into, like, how some people just realize they made this a business, and that COVID is helping the pharmaceutical monsters of the world or whatever. But I just found it to have, like, the best imagery. And as you guys know, I love imagery, and just thought it had a lot of it.
Oh, absolutely. I really like that you bring your own interpretation into for the poem and, you know, onto the show. I think that's really cool. And that's the great thing about having, you know, two or more people commenting on the same poem is you get different thoughts shared. And I did feel like that part where a businessman, the son of a businessman, really brings, you know, it into a modern feel. And I like the way that Daniel let loose with his imagery and really went, you know, into that surrealism, that dreamlike vibe in the stanza that says, a bridge of laughing stone and wobbly steel, wooden planks that still grow as trees. Just wonderful lines there, and the whole write is very well done. And, all right, what do we got next, Rex?
High Rise Butterflies by We're All Gonzo. And who we got next?
You got Confessor Jeremy to read.
I think Jeremy just did one recently. All right, Confessor, this one's for you, please.
Okay. High Rise Butterflies, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Promises kept create celestial light. Secrets encourage the black sky. God is the rain gifting all things life, sequential, provincial surprise. Each moment held true, creating new bonds. Poetic prose protracting protonic delight. Electrons of words, neuronium songs. Neutronium songs, quelling questions of chaotic insight. Promises kept create celestial light, shadowed among mindless chatter, bearing emotions knee deep in lie, undoubtedly becoming one's master. Crafting cancerous grief stratified, secrets encourage the black sky. Oh my God, these words. Atmospheric angels extending airways, nourishing nature's altruistic appetite, silky silhouettes around sunsets ablaze, Virgil's personal infernal delight, God is the rain gifting all things life, cosmic background interference, matter retrofitted, contorted, concise, repeating life in a similar Repeating life in a similar sequence, kaleidoscopic viewing, flat circular eyes, sequential revengeful surprise. Oh my God, end poem.
Well, yeah, there are definitely some $5 words in there, but that was an excellent new character test.
Like, what
I
did
think
they
it was
do?
Much the $5 words. It was all the alliteration. I didn't realize there was that much alliteration, but damn.
There is. Like, yeah. And I really like it.
I mean, you get a nice opening stanza, and everything kind of flows out from there. Poetic prose, protracting protonic delight, and all the alliteration just keeps going.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And why don't you go ahead and continue on, Rex? Let's hear the rest of your thoughts on this poem.
All right. Start with the first stanza. Promises kept create celestial. Promises kept create celestial lights. Secrets encourage the black sky. God is the rain gifting all things life. Sequential, reverential, surprise. There's a nice note into that of what is the world as it is. But everything from then on down, each stanza kind of sits with its own thought, because each one of those lines is now moved to the bottom of each stanza. The first one goes to the bottom line of the second stanza. The second line goes to the bottom line of the third stanza. The third line to the bottom line of the fourth and the fifth stanza. So each stanza after that offers up its own little thought on that one single line to which it finishes on, and then kind of molds itself into the next next stanza going forth. Promises kept create celestial lights, shadowed amongst mindless chatter, bearing emotions knee-deep in lie, undoubtedly becoming one's master, crafting cancerous grief gratified, secrets encourage the black sky. There's kind of a nice intermingled note that they all follow, but they all offer up a different singular thought. You could take each stanza of these and offer them up as brevities by themselves and give people plenty of thought to delve into. And, all right, that was pretty cool, just on their own. But together, they all make up a nicely viewed piece, which comes right back to that opening stanza, the first four lines. Those are the most important bits.
Absolutely. And I like how you mentioned, Rex, how each is almost like a snapshot, its own view, its own voice, but that they all connect back up to that first part. So really great observation here. I have to say, besides on a technical level, besides the alliteration, I thought there was just some really great use of slant rhyme within this poem. So I thought that was very well done. And great comment, Rex. And Jeremy, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out the poem. I just freaking got it. I just got what Rex just said about the format. Okay, I'm tracking now.
Okay.
I really loved Confess's read of this, because yeah, it's Gonzo. It's pure Gonzo, and I love Gonzo. I love Hunter S. Thompson. I love celebrating words, and I love the fact that this one just kind of mixed it up. It created a format which stays true, and it's, even with all the alliteration, it's a tongue twister. There's a lot of heavy words in this, and that's why I appreciated Confess's read of it. Because the moment of clarity, which I thought was really cool in her read, was in the 1, 2, 3, in the fourth, when it said, God is the rain gifting all things life. That was the easiest line to comprehend for a long way through that poem. And it kind of was a break, and it kind of went, it was a breath of all of it. And I appreciated that, and I liked it. It came after Virgil's, and I paid specific attention to, now realizing that it's per what Rex pointed out with the formatting, but I thought it was interesting how God was not capitalized in the first, and then it was capitalized in the fifth, or 1, 2, 3 in the fourth. And I think that was an interesting move, but I see that was done as a formatting choice. But I still like that. I like that this poem kind of went, it wasn't afraid to get freaky, but then when you unfold it, there's method to the madness 100%, and there's a structure to it, and there's a dogma to it that makes a lot of sense. And it's so easy a lot of times to get lost in poetry and kind of give up and say, I don't get it, I don't understand. But those are the ones I like the most, because you just got to let go and let your emotions guide the way. And that's what I was doing on this one. So I appreciate the light being struck on the format. I appreciated the read. And viva la Gonzo, because hell yeah, we need more of that in this world today.
I like that. Viva la Gonzo. Cool. And you're right. There is a method to the madness. And you know, Rex did a great job pointing that out. And yeah, sometimes you do have to just, as you say, Jeremy, just let go and, you know, appreciate and let our emotions guide us through a poem. So great comment there. And confess, you read that wonderfully. Your thoughts?
Yeah, so I'm ready to say that I felt that it was hard to read at first, especially in the midst of the alliteration. As you can see, my lines got tripped up around certain words. But in the end, after rereading it and just kind of trying to see where it was going, I just kind of let it be what it is. And I love butterflies, so I was kind of happy reading this, because the representation of butterflies to me always is, I think, is universal now. It's where it represents that metamorphosis. And we know that God is the creator. And so I think the reason why that line, God is bringing, gifting all things life, is, you know, emphasize so much, is because, you know, he is the reason why these things grow. He's the reason why we do have that, the celestial lights and can write in alliteration. He's giving us these words. He's creating us the creativity that we have. And I am so grateful for this poem to open my eyes, because literally, if I say, for instance, we were to like click poems, and you know how sometimes you have to go through like the newest poems and actually read them to like comment, or you know, when you're making your own comments.
Oh, absolutely.
And then to comment on the poems, this is one of those poems where I'll read the first stanza and it has to suck me in. And this is one of those poems I would have to reread, and I probably wouldn't reread it after the first time because of the trickiness of it all. But I am also a fan of alliteration. I love a good alliterated poem. So it also won me over this time. So that's good.
Absolutely. I agree. Well said there. And just an excellent write by We Are All Gonzo. Strong use of imagery and metaphor and alliteration and rhyme. And I like this all the way through, but it was the third stanza with Shatter Amongst Mindless Chatter that really stood out to me. So this was very well done. And I'd like to thank Jeremy and Confess for calling in. I'd like to say great show, Rex, and thank you to you, as always, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, who is listening now or will be listening later. We appreciate you all. Part two is going to be on the 14th of January. And, Rex, you have one contest up for Sunday, and we'll shortly have a contest up for Tuesday for After Midnight. Tell us about those.
Oh, let's see. What's it going to be? Ring in the New Year with Bukowski. Tell me about your New Year with Bukowski, or tell me about the aftermath and how you're still buzzed to the point of excess, or tell me that you can't stand yourself because now you can't move and get out of bed.
That sounds fun. I like that idea. Very cool. And, of course, everyone make sure to keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late-night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. All right, great show, everyone, and have a good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Beth, Jeremy, Pam.